Welcome to Business Insights. I would like to thank you for tuning in. There's a lot of content out there, so you spending this hour with us means a great deal. This show is my opportunity to share the entrepreneurial success stories of our local business owners, and I encourage you to join me each week as we profile a new member of our business community. My guest in studio today is Todd Attridge. Todd is the founder of Different Matters, a behavior change agency that teaches courage-building skills to business leaders. For over 25 years, Todd led business teams through cultural and operational reinventions and, in that time, realized too often leaders fail not because of what they do, but because of how they do it. This was the inspiration for Different Matters. Todd has a business degree from the University of Guelph, is a respected executive coach with the International Coach Federation, and a certified practitioner with the Brené Brown Education and Research Group, specializing in organizational courage building. Aside from his work with Different Matters, Todd is an international business consultant, keynote speaker, and guest lecturer at various colleges and universities. Welcome to the show, Todd.
Oh, thanks, John. It's good being here.
So I really want to start this story about, you know, where you're from and where you grew up.
Okay. Well, I grew up in a small town, Leamington, southwestern Ontario. And we actually moved there, I think, when I was about 8 years old. Lived there until I went off to university, the University of Guelph. Yeah, so that was, it was a small town beginning, and a great little town, too.
You grew up there. Where do you move on to next?
Yeah, so I ended up going to the University of Guelph to study Hotel and Food Administration. I got a Bachelor of Commerce there, and it was not what I thought I was going to do. You know, it's one of those things where you remember you're in high school and you're trying to figure out what to do for the rest of your life, and they send you down to the guidance counselor, and the guidance counselor tells you to fill out the little bubbles, right? And the little bubbles tells you this is what you're supposed to do for the rest of your life. So I wanted to go into psychology, and the little bubble said I should go into business. And so I remember sitting with my guidance counselor saying, but I want to go into psychology. And she's like, yeah, but the bubbles say you should be going to business. So, right, it's one of those things.
Computer says no.
Computer says no, right? And so I was like, okay, well, I guess I'll go to business. The bubbles aren't wrong. That's what they say. So I ended up going, I was in the restaurant business at the time. When I was 14, I started with McDonald's and fell in love with it. And so I thought, okay, well, I'll do business, but I think I want to do hotel and food. I want to be in the restaurant business. So at the time, there was only two schools in Canada that offered a commerce degree in hotel and food. One was in Calgary and one was in Guelph. So I ended up going to the University of Guelph and absolutely loved it. Like, it was an outstanding experience.
So I wanted to bring you back, actually. You mentioned there that you kind of started working at McDonald's at the age of 14. Would you say that that was an interesting experience for your personal development working at McDonald's? And would you say that people should do that today? Like, to have those first jobs quite
early? Yeah, for sure. Yeah, you know, it's so yes, the experience was outstanding, and for a lot of reasons.
Sure.
At the age of 14, you know, my dad had a bit of a philosophy, right? Like, when you're old enough to get a job, you're going to get a job. And so McDonald's was, you know, because Leamington was a small town, it was only 12,000 people. And so McDonald's was sort of the social hub, right? Like, sure, that's where everyone would go. And as teenagers, it was just up the street from the high school. So we would all go, and lots of us worked there. That aside, the training program, I got my first leadership position at 15. I was a training coordinator by the time I was 16, you know, 17, you know, they're giving me. So, like, where else as a young person can you get those kinds of experiences where you're leading people at such a young age?
And you can see a clear path.
Absolutely. And in fact, by the time I got to, you know, well, we had grade 13 then. So by the time I got to grade 13, they were offering me a full-time position at McDonald's. also, it was around the same time that they were opening up the McDonald's in Russia. And so I'd qualified to go over and open up the Russian store. And it didn't go because my parents didn't think it was appropriate that I'd be going over to Russia. So missed opportunity there. But but it was a real decision, right? Like, do you go off to university and get a business degree, or do you continue a path with this organization? And there's lots of people, like, you know, in fact, McDonald's is one of my clients. So there's lots of people there who have spent from the age of 14 all the way to the age of like 54 in McDonald's. Like, that's sort of been one of their things.
Fascinating. So obviously it makes an impact. It helps you understand certain levels of work ethic. And then also, again, like that progression, it's they obviously want to promote within.
Yep.
Is a big thing that McDonald's does. So you finish high school, you go to University of Guelph.
Yeah, that's right.
Seems to be a very common university graduation for guests on my show.
Yeah.
You complete your time at University of Guelph. What do you do then? What is that first leap out of university?
Yeah, so I'd love to say that I was like that star student that, you know, 4 years down the road ended up, you know, graduating and moving on and doing that traditional path. I wasn't that guy. In fact, it took me 9 years to complete my degree. And it was a real sort of windy road through there. And, you know, it's one of those things, John, like, I think all of us go through this at some point where you sort of look back on your entire path and go, you know, how did I get here? And although the points didn't really make sense at the time, when you look back, it's like, well, that's exactly what got me here.
Right.
So after my third semester, my grades didn't warrant getting an invitation back. So instead, I got a Christmas card saying, thanks very much, you can have a timeout right now. And not really knowing, you know, okay, so here I am. I don't know what to do with myself. I'm not in school anymore. Although I worked full time at the university when I was in school, I decided just to leave. And so I, you know, a buddy of mine and I, we got rid of our apartment, we got rid of all of our stuff, we hopped on a plane, flew to Australia, and hung out in the outback of Australia for 6 months, right? And then when I came back, not sure what to do, you know, another friend of mine said, hey, listen, he worked for an airline at the time called Worldways Airlines, which is not around anymore for all the right reasons. And so he said, you know, how would you like to work as a flight attendant? I was like, sure. I was 20 at the time. And it's like, sure, I'll work as a flight attendant. And so I went, applied, never really thought I was going to get it, got it. And so now at 20 years of age, I'm flying around the world with this airline and going, okay, well, this is cool. I can do this for a while. The airline went bankrupt. So I got grounded. And so then it's like, okay, now what? So I returned to the university and started going back to school part-time. But at that time, then was working full-time in hotel and food. So I, at the university, they have a fantastic food service division. So I joined them and became a manager with them. And that was sort of the next number of years until I finally graduated. So it was just, you know, and people have asked me in the past, like when I tell that story, it's like regrets, would you do it differently? It's like, I wouldn't do a thing differently. Like it was a great, you know, 9 year adventure of exploring all sorts of great things. And quite frankly, a lot of the stuff that I learned in that 9 years are practices that I apply today in the business.
So yeah, I have a couple of questions here I'm interested in. So backpacking through Australia, that was a real experience, I'm sure.
Oh yeah.
You got to see that country, you got to see the differences between those two, the two countries, but yeah. You know, obviously, it starts to make the world a little smaller.
For sure. Yeah.
Then you start working for the airline. Yeah. And then what was your typical route?
So I got typically Europe. Okay. So the countries I would go to were England, Scotland, France, Italy, Germany. And I would hit those often. Portugal was on there. From time to time, I'd go to the Caribbean. And here's the funny thing about it. So getting into it, I thought to myself, okay, well, I'm probably going to, like, gander. Right? You know, like, but what I learned was the longstanding professional flight attendants, the ones that, like, this is their career, they have families at home, they don't want to do the overseas flights. They want to do the quick turnarounds, get to Montreal and fly home and be home for dinner. Mm-hmm. So all the sort of shorter flights that I thought I was going to end up with and, you know, wasn't overly excited about, they were all taken. So that meant I'm overseas, and yes. You know, you get out there, you spend 3 or 4 days in London, then they fly you home again. And, you know, for a 20-year-old guy, it's like, oh my God, this fantastic. Is incredible. They're putting you up in 5-star hotels and you're putting, you know, paying for your meals. And like, you live like a bit of a rock star, which is probably why they're not in business anymore. But,
so, well, what an interesting experience. And yeah. I'm sure that was very formative for you as far as, you know, seeing the world, but also then ultimately probably gave you enough push to want to complete your degree as well. So it kind of coincided with that.
Yeah, I think what happened was, you know, there was something, and I was young going into university. Like, I started university when I was 18. Mm-hmm. And so I think there was a need to stretch my legs a bit and just, you know, see what else is out there. And that break gave me that opportunity. So coming back, I was determined. I'm going to get this degree. Whereas before, it's like, I got to get this degree. You know, the bubble said I had to, right? Mm-hmm. You know, life says you're supposed to do something along those lines. So I was just sort of following the script. And then, you know, there gets to a point where it's like, okay, so I've done some of these other things. Now I actually want to do it. So mm-hmm. now I'm double down on this thing and loved it. And in fact, you know, a little ironic story about all that is, the course that actually got me sort of eliminated, the big fail for me was, you know, I decided I was going to take a third year human resources course in second year, which was stupid on all sorts of levels. And I ended up getting a miserable mark, and that was the final straw, and I left. Circling back years later, the professor who actually led that course or instructed that course, I came back as guest lecturer for his course and continued as a guest lecturer for over 10 years. And he and I have become very good friends and so on. And we always start the class by, so Todd was one of these kids that we ended up getting rid of and then coming back. So you never know what you're going to learn. And there's a lesson, I think, in absolutely everything that comes your way.
That's fascinating. I think it's your failures teach you more than your success,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, 100%. Right. And, you know, in my business, and, you know, we can talk a little bit about it more. There's a phrase of, you know, you can choose courage or you can choose comfort, but you can't have both. Mm-hmm. And comfort, although feels really good, there's less learning in comfort, right? When we do the same thing over and over and over again, but you take a little courage, you go down that path that, you know, looks a little dark and you're not really sure what's around the next corner. That's where the adventure is and that's where the lessons are.
Certainly. So you complete your time at Guelph, then yep. you go out into the working world. What does that look
Where
like?
Where does that land? So I actually land at, of all places, Canada's Wonderland. And
fascinating.
Yeah, right. And so here I am. Now I'm in a theme park. And I am working in the food services there. You know, I start off as a restaurant manager, go into sort of an area manager, or they call it an area manager. And those are seasonal positions. And I was doing that while I was still finishing up my degree. By the time all that wrapped up, they offered me a full-time position working as the, you know, sort of assistant director of food services. So at this point now, I'm designing the restaurants, I'm helping with the menus, I hire a staff of, you know, we'd have a seasonal staff of about 1,500, you know, I'd have about 150, 200 managers reporting to me seasonally, and that was just an incredible experience. Right now I'm learning all sorts of stuff about really, you know, the restaurant industry, yes, but more about leading, right? How do you lead a bunch of, you know, 18, 19, 20-year-olds who are there, you know, on their summer breaks from school, maybe not overly invested in the role because it's, you know, it's very short, right? I'm going to get in there, I'm going to learn a few things, I'm going to leave.
And they could be there because they want to have fun and they sure. wanted to just make a bit of money.
Yeah, yeah. And in a lot of cases, it's a free pass into the park, right? So mm-hmm. what a great way of doing that. So you start learning different things about people and their behavior and what motivates them and how do you motivate an uncaptive audience, right? How do you motivate sort of that transient audience to and hook them in so that they're going to do stuff?
Ooh, that's interesting because, I mean, you could argue that if it's an audience that has higher turnover, meaning they're going to have... They're not really going to necessarily care about the overall experience and messaging. They're going to be like, I have a job, I just need to complete it. So tell me what were the things that really stood out that you could do to help motivate people that are in that capacity?
Yeah, well, and that's it, right? So you end up learning in a very, very quickly what's in it for them, right? There's got to be something in it for them. And, you know, I come from an age where, you know, the leadership style of the day, and all of us went through this, you know, because it was the leadership style of the Industrial Revolution. In fact, this leadership style called command and control effectively died in the late 90s. When the information age kicked in and the industrial age, you know, shifted. But that command and control style was, do what I say, speak when spoken to, you're lucky to have a job, right? Like, that was the style, right? But, you know, as you feel in the 90s that shifting, what you're really saying to people is, so what would make this interesting for you? How would you like to be included? What would you like to do? Where are your goals? How can we help you get to where you're going through this job? And that shift of, you know, taking the focal point from, hey, listen, you got a job, I'm paying you, you're going to do whatever I tell you to, okay, I get it. You're here on the for the summer, and you're going for a psych degree. So how can we use this experience to help you understand your psych degree? Or how can we use this experience to help you understand your law degree, right? And so you start getting them involved in things about the business that are a personal interest to themselves.
Wow. Like, I mean, that's not a completely engaging group of people are wanting to have more fun than, because they just went through two terms of school or something, right? And they're going, okay, I'm just gonna have fun now. And that's then right. You're gonna say, well, I mean, we want a little bit more buy-in.
That's right.
And how we're gonna do that is by taking this certain approach.
Yeah,
I'm sure that it worked some of the time, and other times it was, you know, you hit a wall.
100%. Yeah. In some cases, people are just like, listen, this is my summer, right? I'm just, yeah. And so we get it. And I think we did a really good job of hiring and such that, you know, we were able to operate at a really great level. But, you know, the truth of the matter is it's a very transient, like these people, you know, you figure they get to you by, you know, April, you know, you start training, you open the doors in May. You know, they haven't even got their feet on the ground June or July, and you're halfway through your season. You're getting ready to wrap up, right? By September, they're back to part-time because they're back at school. So mm-hmm. Anyways, it created a really interesting environment in which you have to look at leadership in different ways, right? Mm-hmm. How do you keep all those components? So it was an excellent experience for sure.
Fascinating. So you spend some time at Canada's Wonderland.
Yep.
Where do you lead it from there?
Yeah. So about my seventh year there, I had a fairly good run there, and same sort of thing. Like, you know, by the time I was wrapping up, they were offering me more positions. It was a great way to, you know, cut your teeth and learn new things and so on. And at that time, I got an offer from a company called Surcorp. Now, the name may not mean much, but the brands will, right? So these folks own things like Jack Astor's and Alice Fazuli's and Canyon Creek and so on. And they were opening at the time a new restaurant called Leone's Italian. And Leone's Italian was downtown Toronto, John Street, doesn't exist anymore, but at the time it was going to be the next big thing for them. And they were looking for an opening management team. So I got hired in there as the bar manager, and this was a collaboration they did between Surcor and Second City. And so the idea was Second City had moved they moved from the fire hall over into this new facility. And so now it was sort of like a dinner and a show kind of thing is the way it was set up. And although it wasn't intended to be dinner and a show, it was like, hey, that's an option for people. It turned into almost exclusively a dinner and a show kind of thing, right? So may not have been what they were looking for, but anyways, that's what they ended up with. And I was with them, I think, 3 months. And my boss pulls me aside and he says, listen, we've got a property down on Front Street called the Armadillo Texas Grill. And we need a general manager. We'd like you to come over and run this. And this is a restaurant that, I think it was four of them in the chain at the time, but the one on Front Street, which made millions and millions and millions of dollars, was losing money. Now you have to go out of your way to generate millions in sales and not make money. And so I went in, and it was, again, one of those funny stories where the president of the organization had said to my boss, you know, like, this kid's not going to make it. I think I was 27 at the time, right? And he's like, you know, this kid's not going to make this. And my boss is like, but let's just see what happens. And anyways, we turned the thing around, became the most profitable restaurant in the company. And it was really around, and I would say, John, like in you know, again, you look back and you see those little points and you're not really sure what they all mean at the time, but they all sort of line up. That was probably one of the most pivotal things in my entire career, and actually got Different Matters probably to where it is the most, because when I went in, that's when I stopped and went, okay, this isn't about business management. What I'm doing here is not about business management. This is about behavioral science. This is about human behavior. How do you start studying human behavior? And so back in high school, when I wanted to be a psychologist and they said, no, you're going to go be a, you know, the bubble say no, businessman, this is where it all changed, because I started actually studying all the psychology on the side and used all the human behavior stuff to lead a team and turn them around so that they could be more successful in business. So that was the first time when, you know, I was conscious about the idea that, no, I'm in the human behavior business. I'm not in the business behavior, business.
I really like that. We're going to take a quick break, actually,
sure.
And we're going to come back and we're going to delve more into that,
yeah.
Specifically what the business of Different Matters specifically does, yeah. And what the learning outcome, obviously, from turning around the restaurant on Front Street.
Yeah.
Thank you. Welcome back to Business Insights with John Racine. My guest today is Todd Attridge. He is the founder and owner of Different Matters. So, Todd, you're the manager of Armadillo Restaurant on Front Street in downtown Toronto.
Yeah.
You've been tasked with the challenge,
yep,
of turning this place around. You said that you knew that this challenge was no longer just strictly a business challenge. It was going to be a behavioral challenge. And it's really interesting you say that, because I think these are the type of things that are becoming more common in our practice now, but certainly then it wasn't something that people were applying to restaurants or their businesses. You knew that this was going to take a bigger shift in order to make this change. Tell us a little bit about how you enacted this change.
Yeah, so a lot of it started with looking at the team. So one of the reasons why the business was failing in the first place didn't have anything to do with the training that the staff received. It didn't have anything to do with their qualifications. It had nothing, like, they were all capable people. They were all well-trained individuals. Where it fell short was they weren't applying what they knew to the role. And so we started with a very simple square one, which is, what are the values that we're trying to uphold? And at the time, the notion of sitting around talking about values was really quite foreign. Like, you know, it was not unusual for companies to have values written on a wall someplace, right? That wasn't it. But the idea of actually digging in and going, okay, what do we want to create as a group of people who have come together? So we started digging into things like respect and honesty and trust and achievement. And so I would have these kinds of conversations with people, like, what kind of environment do you want to be working in? And so when we started talking about those words, they're nice words, like they sound great, right? Who wouldn't want to be in an environment full of respect and trust and so on? But there's something underneath those words, and it's the behavior. So what does it take to have a workplace of respect? What are the things we have to be doing? What are the ways in which we have to behave that are acceptable and unacceptable? And so we started as a collective. This wasn't me, you know, like sermon from the mount kind of stuff. This was, you know, getting the team together and saying, so what kinds of behaviors will we accept, and what kind of behaviors will we not accept as the team of the Armadillo? And as we started listing those out, then it became very evident, okay, gang, this is what it is. If you behave like this, you're welcome to stay here and it's going to be great. And if you don't, this probably isn't the place for you and you probably need to move on. And so we started seeing shifts in behavior of, you know, dealing with people in a much more respectful way, a much more trustworthy way. And that was a huge shift in business because not only are they doing it with each other, but they're doing it with the guests when they're going out on the floor. Now I'm going to treat you with respect. I'm going to stop and listen to your concern when you say your food isn't great instead of just blowing past it and going, yeah, I'll get a manager for you. So that was one of the major shifts. Probably the other big shift was, and again, this was the big word coming out of the 80s was empowerment, right? We're going to empower our people, right? But what that really means is I'm going to allow you to make decisions because you're closer to the problem than I am. So a major shift that came along was me saying to them, listen, if you're working with a table and things are going sideways and you know that, you know, we need to rectify issues, I don't want you to turn to them and say, let me go get my manager and my manager's going to solve it. You're closer to it than I am. Make the decision. If you got to buy the meal, buy the meal. If you got to buy the whole table, buy the whole table. If you got to buy them beers, buy them beer. Like, it doesn't really matter. Solve it because you have a relationship with these people that we don't. You have a connection to them that we don't. By me coming by and just saying, hi, I'm Todd, I'm your manager. Can you please explain to me what your problem is? And, you know, and having like a little grid of, okay, well, if that's your problem, this is the solution. It's keeping that human connection alive of, okay, listen, I'm feeling your pain. Like, you sat here for 25 minutes without getting your meal. That's unacceptable. And you're trying to get to a Blue Jays game, and that's unacceptable. So we started shifting that. Initially, it was really sort of met with a lot of eyebrow raising, right? Like, my boss and the boss's bosses are all like, what? Like, you're letting servers decide whether that we're going to buy an entire table? Yes, I am. And it's like, they're all going to just buy tables. No, they're not, right? Like, you trust in them, and they didn't. Like, the staff were really quite reasonable, and they'd sit with people, and what we found was that relationship that they had with the guest was so strong that when they actually said, listen, here's a $25 coupon next time you come in from me, that meant more than if the manager came by and said, here's a $25 coupon from me.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. I think you can get lost in the hierarchy of decision making, and I think that if ultimately you empower your people to be able to make some of these decisions, I think that that's a type of empowerment that is not necessarily going to be abused because you feel a responsibility for it.
Well, that's it, right? And I think when you know, there's a great phrase that says, you know, if you want people to act responsibly, you have to give them responsibility. So when I say to 100 people who work, you know, as servers and bartenders and door staff and cooks and so on, I say to you, you know what, you guys are as much a part of this business as I am. So I trust you to make the best decisions for this business. They do it. And the best decisions for a business is not always in the favor of the business. The best, you know, because the business involves the guest. They're a stakeholder. So if you're going to do what's best for the business, oftentimes that's taking care of your customer and your client. One of the things that I, you know, came away with from, you know, I was in that experience for just under 5 years, but here's what I learned about customer service. Customer service is not following inside the guidelines or following, you know, the company policies. Great customer service is when you break the company policy, right? Because following the company policy, that's just, you know, blindly going through the motions, right? And when you say, well, I'm sorry, that's our policy, that's not what people are looking for. But when they say, listen, you know, our policy is A, but here's what I'm going to do for you because it really got screwed up, and I'm going to go to B instead, then people are like, great. Thank you. Because now you're listening to the problem. You're listening to what matters to them and what needs to be solved. So when we started shifting those kinds of things, and I remember the day I said to my boss, I've taken out all of the customer service policies and I've created customer service guidelines. And he looked at me and goes, what the hell does that mean? And I said, it means that we're not stuck doing any one thing. We're going to do whatever it takes to make people happy. Anyways, so what we saw then was, in the course of about 3 years, you know, we went from being one of the least profitable restaurants in the company to being the most profitable, and we ended up tripling our sales very quickly. You know, and anyone who remembers the Armadillo from back in those days, we would have lineups down the street, right? Sorry, I said Loose Moose simply because
that's that's a good segue. Tell us just a little bit of how that came up.
Yeah, so about 3 years into the Armadillo, it started going so well. We had a space underneath it, and so I had gone to the president at the time and said, I want to open a bar. And he's like, what are you talking about? So we have all the space sensors, open a bar. Anyways, to make a long story short, that bar turned into the Loose Moose. And the Loose Moose became one of the most successful and busiest bars on Front Street. So,
it's interesting. I think success then opens the door for more opportunity because you've proven that this style or this system works, and then and then that can really build some momentum.
Yeah, for sure.
So, where did you take your craft after the Armadillo?
Yeah, well, after that, I started getting a reputation as being the fixer. So, and
that's a good reputation.
It's not a bad reputation. And the funny thing is, again, it was all rooted in human behavior. It was looking at how do people behave, and how do you get people to do things because they want to, not because they have to. And you can change anything when you start getting into that. So, being a bit of a psychology geek, I started reading like Carl Jung and all these psychologists around, what does human behavior look like and how do you apply it? And that was the start of, from there I went over to Milestones, and they had a Milestones at Yonge and Dundas Square, which in a very similar vein was making lots of sales, not making a lot of revenue, went in, switched that around, ended up becoming a director of operations for Milestones, going around and fixing these little restaurants where, how do you change the behavior, how do you change the culture, how do you change, the way people operate, the habits that they're taking. And it was around that time that I thought, I want another tool in the toolbox. And so I stumbled upon executive coaching. Never heard of it at the time. This is, we're probably in and around, early 2000s. And it was still a fairly young field. But I went and studied, did all this, and then took the skills I learned as a coach and applied them back into the workplace as well. So all these different places, although outwardly people would see me as the fixer and thought of it as a business, in my mind it's like, this is all just human behavior. The backdrop happens to be restaurants, and it happens to be, going in and fixing operations and so on, but it's a transferable, how do you take human behavior and apply it to anything? And that was the start, right? That was the start of, looking at a business model that, helps organizations change their behavior so they can get their goals. So I ended up leaving operations altogether and went into leadership development with actually Care Operations at the time. So at this time, then, I went into people development, I was writing leadership programs, I was coaching the executives of brands like Harvey's and Swiss Chalet and so on. And that was another great step. And again, one of those little points along the line, because for 5 years then, I was taking what I had learned in feet on the ground, getting your hands dirty leadership, and applying it into mass scale leadership development. And it was working. We were changing the script around, leadership is really around getting out of the way so that people can step into what they naturally will want to step into.
Fascinating. So I guess having a firm background in operations and having understood how people can really flourish in an environment in which has been set up or created for their benefit, for them to actually do that. I guess this seems very deliberate, this path, when you really think about it.
When you look back on it, it's all leading someplace. And, as water always finds its way, right? Mm-hmm. 5 or 6 years ago then, I sat down and went, okay, so here's all the stuff I've got, right? Here's all the things I've gone through. Here's all the things I've learned. Here's all the things I know to be true. What does that mean? Mm-hmm. And what it meant was the creation of Different Matters. And Different Matters, really came out of this background of how do we take, behavior, change it, form new habits, new routines within organizations so they can achieve the results. And it's funny because so many organizations who don't get the results that they're looking for blame it on training. And I'm going to go back and I'm going to say, all right, I'm going to retrain you, or I'm going to put you through another course. And then after they've done it a couple times, they go, okay, this person just isn't getting it. You know, we have to move on. We have to find someone else. And the truth of the matter is, it's not the knowledge or the lack of knowledge that's getting in the way. It's the application of knowledge. So you have to figure out how to take the stuff that they've learned and apply it to their own business settings, right?
So that's really interesting, because I think that if I can bring this back into like more of a small business idea, you have I mean, the majority of businesses are small businesses.
Yeah.
Training can be an issue. Small businesses don't always reinvest into training and or education, mainly because sometimes they feel like they've done it and haven't got the value back. Yep. So we're going to send everybody up to do a course. They come back hard to implement how we're going to utilize it. It's almost the thought of the education was they thought was step one, two, and three.
Right.
They come back hard to implement. So they feel kind of nervous, or they feel there isn't value in sending people away to get trained, and that maybe people should just have the initiative. They should have learned these skills, or they should be learning these skills on their own time and then proving their way.
Yes.
When in time, actually, or it's really, sure, step one is important. Get the education. Step two, we have to be prepared when they come back with that education and how we're going to implement it.
Yeah.
Tell us just a little bit about maybe where people are naturally making mistakes, small businesses, by sending people and getting, and then what the expectation, what should they really be doing?
Yeah. So, great example there is, the small business person who wants to send people for training. The cost of training can feel really daunting, especially for a small business, right? It's just like, I don't have the money to be able to invest in these people and learn things. When people have gone off and learned things, and it doesn't matter whether it was through the organization itself or the small business itself or whether or not they just happen to do it on their own, what the small business owner needs to be able to do then is give them space to practice it. Because without that, and the analogy I would give you is, if I'm the employee and I learned everything, I'm the plane. If you're the employer, you're the runway. You need to give me a long enough runway that I can land the plane and do this properly. If you give me a short runway and I crash and burn, I probably don't want to apply that knowledge again, and so I'll stop. And so all those great things that I know, I'm not going to share them with your organization because I crashed and burned. So the truth of the matter is, if I'm coming in, it may be a bumpy landing at first. Maybe maybe it's not going to be the smoothest landing. But what I need from you as the employer is the ability to look at and go, okay, wasn't perfect. That's okay. Try it again, and then try it again, and try it again. Because eventually it will be perfect, right? It'll work, and it'll work really smoothly. Where people lose patience or give a shorter runway, what they're really doing is saying, I know that you know all this stuff, but if you can't nail it the first time, I don't want to see it come out. And people are nervous, and they're like, okay, I don't know if I can actually land this the first time. So, maybe I'm not going to take the plane up because maybe I can't land it perfectly the first time.
It's really interesting you say that, because I think a lot of the times, I'd say a business owner will have already mapped out what their expectations are, what they're going to get in return for doing these things.
Yep.
And it may not be a large training. It may be something very small that they're doing as a group or whatever. And they're almost expecting, like, you got it? Okay, good. Now start applying it right now.
Right. Right. And it takes practice. And you know what? And here's what's on the other side of risk. Like if I'm going to try new things, on the other side is innovation, right? Because you don't get innovation unless you take a risk and try new things. You don't get large scale thinking, strategic thinking. You don't get strategic plan. All of that stuff disappears unless you're willing to take a risk. And I work with small business owners, small medium business owners, who are the entrepreneurs, right? I took all of my stuff that I learned. I have now created a business. I have hired people. And so they're putting all the risk on the line, right? Like, if this doesn't work, like, it's my table that doesn't have food. I'm paying you a salary. So because of that, not many of them are willing to allow other people to take a risk on their behalf. So by stifling other people's ability to take risk and try new things and expand the business, they actually keep their business small, because it's only as good as what the business owner is capable of doing. And I worked with a fellow a number of years ago who was in this exact same spot. He wanted the business to grow. He desperately wanted his business to grow. But there was no way he was going to allow his people to try things that were outside of his own comfort zone, because if it went badly, he's the one who has to feel the brunt of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So the best thing first of all, best question a small business or small medium business owner can ask to their staff is, what do you think? That's the best, like, if there's ever a question, just, what do you think? And start getting all of that information pulled in, because that's where it starts. You start seeing people who have got outside experiences, they've got outside knowledge that they can bring and go, well, you know, this is what I believe. In order for that to happen, though, you have to have created an environment where it's safe to speak my mind. Because if I speak my mind and say, well, you know, I think we're off base here, John, like, I don't think we should be doing ABC. I think you made a mistake on that. And the response is, what's wrong? You know, then that shuts it down. That's the short runway. And it's like, okay, I'm not taking that plane back up again.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that leads into feedback and how that all
That's
works.
Right.
And I think that ultimately, I think we had a previous discussion about how feedback can ultimately be a non-starter, because people are nervous about the style of feedback that not just the business owner and the employees, but also the employees amongst themselves.
Sure.
And then ultimately, sure, we all have this great feedback, but we don't know how to either give it or receive it.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. It's, you know, feedback's really fascinating, because we all say we want some. Rarely that's true. We all feel, you know, I think collectively, if we all got together on the planet and said, is feedback a good thing, we'd all say yes. But very few of us give it in a honest way, or give it in a productive way, right? Where people are going to receive it. And it's that fear of the reaction. It's the fear of saying, hey, I don't think you did that well, or hey, here's a better way of doing things, or hey, I listened to what you were saying and I've had some time to think about it and here's another opinion. It's the reaction, the fear of the reaction on the other side of someone blowing up, getting angry, you know, crying, shutting us down, you know, throwing stones at us. It's the fear of that that makes us think, you know what, I'm not going to do it. The other fear that comes up is people start thinking, well, who am I to question John, right? John's been doing this forever. I just came out of school. Who am I to? Or I've only been in this company for 6 months, right? Everyone else has been here for 6 years. Like, who am I to come by and question what they're doing? And the truth
more is, more so than not, that's the best perspective. Yeah.
Absolutely. And the truth is, you're the perfect person to do it, because you're coming with a fresh perspective, or you are. From the moment you've been hired, you have to accept the fact that you are a valuable employee. They hired you for everything that happened up to that moment. So apply it on day one.
We're speaking with Todd Attridge, founder and owner of Different Matters. We're just going to take a break and we're going to come back with our final segment. Welcome back to Business Insights with John Racine, my guest, Todd Attridge. So Todd, you decide to make your journey from living in Burlington and come down to Port Hope. Your partner, Steve, and you make this journey. Tell us a little bit about what kind of decision-making process this was, because, I mean, neither of you are from this area.
That's right.
So what kind of conversations were you having in order to come to that conclusion?
Yeah, well, they were they're pretty interesting conversations because Steve and I are both from small towns. He's Fort St. John, northern British Columbia. I'm in Leamington, southwestern Ontario. So the idea of living in a small town wasn't a tough decision. So when we would sit around and talk about, okay, do we sell the house in Burlington, move out to Port Hope? And we've got a number of friends out here, which is really why we decided to move out here. We got, you know, good friends, and we've been out to Port Hope so many times and really quite enjoy, you know, everything about it. Because Steve's an educator, we had to make sure that he was able to transfer boards. So that was really the only decision-making thing, because with my business, I can work from anywhere. And so when he was able to transfer out to this board, then it was like, okay, we're good to go. So, yeah, it wasn't a tough decision, and the conversations were fairly easy once we got the pieces in place.
Very good. Tell me, I always kind of fill this last segment with these questions, and I find them really, really important.
Yeah.
So tell me, if you could go back to Todd, maybe it's when you're in university, or maybe it's when you're working with the airline, maybe it's in those years, knowing what you know now.
Yeah.
You know, I'm never asking the question, what would you change? I'm just thinking in a lot of cases, if you had the insight that you have now, what kind of advice would Todd give Todd at the age of 24 that you think is a very valuable message?
Yeah, I think the advice, and I'm glad you don't frame it as like, what would you do differently? Because, you know, if I changed something about the path, I wouldn't be where I am today, and I love where I am today, so I wouldn't change anything about the path. But if I had to heighten my awareness about anything and just say, hey, pay attention to this, it would be trust your instincts more, right? Like your gut is telling you something. It's smarter than you probably give it credit for. So lean into it. Lean into taking chances and taking risks. And, you know, I think I spent a good amount of time, you know, doing that sort of thing. But it's, you know, just lean into those kinds of moments, because that's where the learning is. That's where the lessons are.
So this is kind of a lead into that. Now, what I think is really important is that in your story in particular, you had a very interesting path where you made decisions early on to take an opportunity to travel, take an opportunity to explore industry, come back and finish education. So you're very much looking at all kinds of opportunities all the time. And I think young people, we're given more options today than we've ever been given.
For sure.
But sometimes it's overwhelming, that choice and that direction. If you could give maybe somebody leaving high school or entering university, I guess it really doesn't matter where you are in your education, but you're still young. What advice would you give somebody today that would help set them up to, you know, it's not to start, you know, start off with a tremendous success, but just what would you say to them in order to prepare them, I suppose?
Yeah, I think there's probably two things I would say, John, is one, lean into life, right? And what I mean by that is you're going to come out of your education, doesn't matter what your education is, whether you stop in high school, you go to college, go to university, it doesn't really matter. But the real education is continuing after that. Life is an education, right? And as, you know, pithy as that sounds or whatnot, but look around you, right? Because things are being taught to you all the time. People are saying things to you all the time that you know, if you listen, there's something in there, right? Look at your experiences, see what the value in them. Even, you know, if you run and you trip and you fall, that's okay, right? Like, get back up again and keep on running, because there's a lesson in what you learned. You know, and I would never say that, you know, I had the smoothest of rides through life, but, you know, as it was going along, you're sort of like, okay, well, what does this mean and what can I use it? So that's one thing. The other I would say is embrace the unconventional. We have, you know, there's a certain script to life, right, to do certain things at a certain time and so on, and society has sort of put some pressure on all of us to conform to a certain thing. But if you look around the corner and you see something that's wildly fascinating to you, go explore it. Like, there's no harm in doing that. There's no harm in looking around the corner and seeing what's down that. And there's a number of years ago, I was in a place in Europe called Bruges, right? And Bruges is this funny little town that's quite magical and so on. But it has all these little walkways and so on. I remember one time I was walking down this little path, and at the end of like a path, there's a door. And it was like, okay, well, I'll open the door and see what happens. And you open the door, and it turned into this huge outdoor patio overlooking a river. People are out there having drinks and so on. And so you go in, and I often think of that experience as sort of a global life experience of go open doors, right? Because you never know what excitement is on the other side of it.
I really like that. So obviously, you have built a foundation of being able to understand how people's behaviors are going to motivate them and how they're going to ultimately reinforce some change and positive change within a business. You must have, during this period of time, observed other people, learned certain things yourself. I always find it fascinating to know what people's habits are. And no matter how big or small they are, really, what kind of habits do you think are really important and have helped aided your success?
I think some of the habits that have helped me, I have a habit around time management, blocking out time. So I always try and figure out what is it I'm trying to get done, why am I trying to do it, what's important, what's not important. Once I've sort of whittled some of that down, then blocking time to make sure I get a chance to do it. That's one of the habits that I learned probably only in the last 6 or 7 years where, you know, I used to just sort of go, okay, do I have enough time to do this? Do I not have enough time to do it? I'll try and get some of it done. I won't get it all done. But when I started looking at things as what's important, what's urgent, what's going to help me achieve my goals, and chose those, everything else then became sort of nice to do's. And, you know, if I had extra time, I could get to the nice to do's. But I wanted to make sure I always slated time for the must do's. And that helped me achieve my goals a lot quicker and with a lot of forethought, right? Like, I didn't leave it to sort of circumstance or happenstance that, okay, well, yeah, I managed to do this. It was actually a well thought out path. So that's a habit. That's not a, you just don't let it roll out. You have to do it time after time after time.
I really like that. I hadn't necessarily heard the prioritizing of the things that you need to get done inside of the time blocking management system. You know, I find it really important that people use a calendar, if it's a digital calendar or something like that. I find so often that small business owners are so busy doing their job, they know how to time manage that, but it's all the other things in life don't necessarily get scheduled.
Yeah.
They could either get forgotten or put to the bottom of the pile. But I really do think we have so much going on.
Oh, yeah.
You need to really create a system in order to make sure you don't miss things and you make sure those things get done as well.
Absolutely. You know, I work with, obviously, a lot of business leaders, and it's amazing how they spend their time, right? And everyone does it differently, but some people will, you know, allow people to schedule their time for them, and whatever happens to be scheduled in, they're going to show up for, whether it is important to them or not important to them. And whenever I sit with a leader and I say, you know, what is it you're trying to get done? And they tell me, and then I say, well, why haven't you been able to do it? And if the answer happens to be, I don't have time for it, what I'm really hearing them say is, I haven't made it a priority. Because we always find time for the things that are important, always. And if we manage our own time in such a way that we figure out what's important and I'm going to block time for it, we'll always achieve what we're trying to achieve. If we don't stop to think about what's important and we just allow our time to manage us, we'll never get to those pieces. So when someone says, you know, I don't have time to train my staff. I don't have time to create a strategic plan. I don't have time to figure out marketing. What they're really saying is you just haven't made that a priority yet. So make it a priority, make it important, put that at the top of your list, figure out how much time you need in a day to dedicate to that, and then put it in your calendar and you'll get it done, right? And then all the other things end up starting to get, you know, squished into, if I have time, I'll get to.
That's very, very good advice. I have a final question.
Yeah.
You've had a lot of success in your career. Mm-hmm. And I guess success means different things to different people, of course. How would you define success?
I think success is if you can look at where you're at and be happy, you've found success, right? It's an internal thing. It's not a how do people feel about where I'm at and how do people feel about what I'm doing. It's an internal metric, and that's going to be different for everyone, right? Like as long as you can look at where you're at and be happy with it, then you're successful.
Thank you very much for spending this time with me, Todd.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me.